Okay, are you ready, B?
Let's grab it and rip it.
Okay, so hi, I'm Nicole,
And I'm Christian.
and welcome to The Crime Couple. Today we'll be covering the Soog Massacre. If you've ever heard someone say, "I'm Switzerland," it usually means they're neutral in a situation. Switzerland's neutrality began with the Peace of Westphalia back in 1640. Aside from establishing their neutrality, it also ended Europe's 30 Years' War. The Treaty of Paris in 1815 guaranteed permanent neutrality, but it wasn't until February of 1920 that the League of Nations formally recognized it. The Swiss haven't participated in a military battle in 500 years.
That's impressive. They're the national leaders of not getting involved in other people's business.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty crazy though that they've been neutral since 1640.
Yeah, like I knew World War I and World War II for sure, but that's going like guns, like pre-guns.
Well, honestly, I read a couple things that the Swiss favored the Axis, the Germany in World War II, but I don't know how accurate that was, obviously. I mean, I can't believe they didn't get involved. I can't believe Germany didn't invade them. I guess that 850,000 people, soldiers, were ready to fight because Germany was threatening to invade.
Well, I mean, they supported the Axis powers, but it seems like they're ready to fight them if they needed to.
Yeah, I guess that's true neutral. Well, you can imagine why Switzerland is one of the wealthiest and happiest countries in the world. It has 26 states called cantons in the Swiss Confederation. Zug is the capital and largest town of the Zug Canton, which stretches 239 kilometers or 92 miles over hilly plateaus. It's a small lakeside town at about 21 kilometers or 8.5 miles, with a population of a little over 30,000. The entire canton's population is at about 124,000, and most of the residents speak German, with Italian being the second most common. So I know that guns are a hot topic right now because of mass shootings, and Switzerland actually has 2 million privately owned guns in a nation of 8.3 million people.
It's almost like what, almost 1 in 4 people?
Yeah. However, they also have mandatory military service for all able-bodied male citizens and they're given a pistol or a rifle that they typically buy and keep after they finish their service.
So that attributes to that number being so high.
Yeah, exactly. The Swiss government actually estimates about half of the privately owned guns in the country are former service rifles.
That makes sense.
Despite having high gun ownership numbers, Switzerland has super strict gun laws and regulations. Anyone who's been convicted of a crime cannot own a gun. Anyone who has a drug or alcohol addiction can't own a gun. Anyone who expresses a violent or dangerous attitude cannot own a gun. Cantonal, how would you say that? Cantonal? Cantonal.
Cantonal.
Cantonal police can consult a psychiatrist or talk with authorities where a prospective gun owner has lived in order to vet them. Gun owners who want weapons for defensive purposes must pass a test to get their license. And it's illegal to carry a gun in the street, except for hunters and sports shooters who can carry their guns only from their home to the firing range.
That seems pretty logical. I don't see a problem with any one of those rules.
Yeah, but despite all these laws, Switzerland still has one of the highest rates of gun violence in Europe. It's still low compared to America. The average year in Switzerland sees one gun murder for every 200,000 of the population. In the US, that figure is about 11 for every 200,000 people.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we're pretty high. But we're nothing compared to like Latin America or anything like that. But there are more domestic homicides and suicides with a firearm in Switzerland than pretty much anywhere else in Europe, except Finland. Which, by the way, Finland is also neutral.
Interesting. I'll start using that as like my I'm Finland.
It's also Austria, Sweden, and one other country, but I can't remember right now. Guns in Switzerland are also a big part of their lifestyle. On the second weekend of September each year, so coming up, About 4,000 Zurich girls and boys aged 12 to 16 take part in Knabenscheissen, a rifle marksmanship contest where the winner is honored with the title of King of the Marksmen.
Wow, that's not weird at all.
It reminds me of Midsommar. No, it reminds me of Midsommar, where they're like the May Queen.
Honestly, Midsommar is just a little bit less strange than that.
But yeah. Friedrich Heinz Liebacher was born July 21st, 1944 in Zug. Not too much is known about his early years, but he did have 3 failed marriages, and I saw one report that they were all mail order brides.
No comment. As the crime couple, I'm not gonna comment.
He did have 1 daughter, but in 1970, he was convicted of incest, theft, forgery, and traffic offenses, but he only served his sentence in a labor camp.
Wow, that is a rigmarole to set this person up, but to only get labor camp? Now, I'm not familiar with their rules over there, but hopefully that labor camp was really intense, because there's some severe crimes.
Well, so I actually did the calculations, because in the event that we talk about today, the daughter was 20 years old at the time, so that means that she was born in about 1981, so I don't think that the incest was with his daughter. I think it had to have been with, like, his immediate family, like his mom's sister, something like that, you know?
I'm not sure. I mean, we've gone over some cases privately where 1-year-olds are being raped by their
journal. That's terrifying. Well, after he was released from the work camp, Friedrich was diagnosed with a personality disorder and alcoholism, and he received an invalidity pension from the Swiss government. In 1998, Friedrich got into a heated argument with a Zug bus driver after he accused him of being an alcoholic. Friedrich accused the bus driver of being an alcoholic, and I guess that he filed the complaint, and the complaint wasn't followed up on, or it was dismissed. And so he pulled a gun on the bus driver at a separate location. It's like later after they had this argument.
Like stalker.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So clearly he has some issues, some mental issues.
Yeah. I think, you said they diagnosed him with schizophrenia, you said?
They just said personality disorders. So I don't know, because his crime, like I said, he got released from prison and then he was diagnosed with his personality disorder, but his crimes didn't occur until 2001.
It seems weird that with all of the, like, for all the, like, having guns, it seems like they're pretty strict with their laws. It just seems weird that they'd allow someone like this just to be roaming around.
Well, actually, I had the same question, and I said I don't know why he was still allowed to have or purchase his guns, and the Swiss government apparently had the same question, because Roland Schweiter, the investigating magistrate, said Friedrich was able to purchase 2 guns in 1998 despite authorities knowing he was unstable.
Maybe it was at one of those gun fairs and gun shows they have over there?
Well, also, I also know that the cantons are the ones that are responsible for the gun ownership. So if you go and you're rejected for a gun in one canton, you can go to a different canton. It's almost like states here.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, the dispute between Friedrich and the bus driver set off a series of legal battles between Friedrich and the local officials of the Zug Transport and Justice Department. He spent years filing and refiling complaints at the regional parliament building, but they always ended in dismissal. The authorities actually ended up suing Friedrich for defamation of character.
This dude is a piece of work all the way around.
Yeah, all of these factors led Friedrich to believe that the government was actually conspiring against him, specifically the cantonal minister, Robert Biesig. Friedrich even passed out pamphlets in town accusing the members of local government of abusing their power.
So he is, like, super radicalized at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very, very radicalized.
You would fit in great here.
I know, it's reminding you of a lot of things right now, huh?
I mean, not to profile mass shooters, but he literally, as we're going through this right now, he's following the steps of someone, has the gun, has radical beliefs.
Yeah. Well, on September 26, 2001, Friedrich had learned that his latest seven lawsuits against the cantonal minister had been dismissed. It sent him into a fit of rage. He knew that the Zug authority held its regular meetings on that Thursday, which would be the following day, the last Thursday of the month, and made a plan to go back to the parliament building.
Uh-oh. I already know what's gonna happen, and I'm just hearing this for the first time.
So that's what he did. At 10 a.m. the following day, Friedrich dressed himself in a fake combat-style uniform that had police written across the front. He left his Zurich home, parked his black Hyundai in a disabled space outside the Zug Parliament building, and got out of his car with a Swiss Army standard assault rifle, a SIG Sauer pistol, a pump-action shotgun, revolver, and a handmade grenade.
The handmade grenade is the one that really is the piece de la resistance. Like, he has the whole armory that he shouldn't already have, but he's walking in there with handmade grenades. Like, this dude, if someone had looking into him, I imagine that they would have been able to see this guy coming.
Yeah.
And what a flex to just park in the handicap spot too. Like, I think the most serial killer thing he would have done is if he had parked in a normal parking spot and then walked. Like, the most sane part of what he did was like, I don't care about my
Not
car.
going back.
Let me just park in the handicap spot.
Yeah. Well, he entered the building easily. There were no security guards because there hadn't been a need before. There were reports that Friedrich went on a brief rant before opening fire with his assault rifle on the assembly room where 80 local representatives and journalists were gathered for that month's session. The shooting lasted 3 to 4 minutes, firing more than 90 rounds. There was a method to Friedrich's madness, though. He had specific targets and called for Robert Bissig to reveal himself. He said, "Show yourself, Bissig. Where are you, coward?" He remained under the desk playing dead next to three of his colleagues who were actually dead.
That is traumatizing. Wow. Wow.
Survivors recalled the horrific event by describing that Friedrich seemed to single out his victims for execution and sometimes sprayed bullets about him indiscriminately while they lay on the floor playing dead. Clara Schumann, who passed by the building at the time, said that she heard low thuds of gunfire and knew that something terrible was happening. She looked inside and saw people running and people staggering around with blood all over them. She said blood was running in the hallways like so much splash paint. It was a ghastly nightmare scene. Reporter Dominic Hertog said the man strode through the whole floor shooting at people. Once Friedrich was done shooting, he made one last effort by throwing his homemade grenade into the assembly room. It was powerful enough to rip the doors off and shatter the windows of the building. He then shot himself in the head.
Wow, this is a lot to process. This is a horrible event for that city, and just what we've just seen this in America so many times. I know that the rates are gonna be lower. I mean, we, like you said, Latin America pretty much leads it, but I think we are pretty much higher up there in terms of like the mass quantity shootings, and it's just sad to see that there is somewhat of a recipe for these kind of things happening, and it's just sad to see that it's not only in America that people have to go through these things.
And keep in mind, this is only like 2 weeks after 9/11. So they did a ton of research to make sure that this wasn't also connected to the US terrorist attacks at this time. But I'm sure the world was thinking that it
How
was.
do you not? How do you not attribute everything like that to 9/11, to Al Qaeda, to.
Yeah, I'm sure the world was like, what is happening right now?
I can just, I mean, we were only like 6 years old when it happened, but I can just only imagine now as an adult thinking, I mean, just taking so many things and attributing it to that. Like, I know there's so much messed up shit that happens every day, but how do you not, like we said?
Yeah. Friedrich killed 14 members of parliament and injured 18 others that day. Among his victims were Herbert Arnett, Peter Bossard, Martin Doble, Jean-Paul Flaxman, Karl Grettener, Heinz Gruder, Konrad Hausler, Dorothea Heimgartner-Haller, Monica Hutter-Halfingler, Eric Eitan, Katharina Langenlinger-Lipp, Kurt Nussbaumer, Rolf Nussbaumer, and Wilhelm Wismar. Friedrich left behind a letter at the scene of the massacre titling the event A Day of Wrath for the Zug Mafia. And in the note, he actually listed people that he was trying to kill.
Yeah, from what we saw, I mean, he had a mission of people that he wanted to kill, and it seemed like he also wanted to add some collateral onto that.
And the guy that he had the biggest vendetta against, Robert Biesig, he survived.
That, I'm not saying that he should have passed, but that's just a tragedy all the way around. Over, what, transportation and a bus driver? Like, no wonder why you said there was no security guards there who thought that someone would want to shoot up a what seems like a Pawnee town hall meeting.
For sure. Spikes in gun violence in Switzerland led to the passing of a law in 2007 that requires all ammunition to be kept in a central arsenal. So there's a big difference in the stigma of guns in America, where gun ownership is all about self-defense and the right to bear arms, where in Switzerland, gun ownership is seen as a means of national security. A Swiss PhD student named Matthias was quoted in an article in BBC stating, "The gun is not given to me to protect me or my family. I have been given this gun by my country to serve my country, and for me it's an honor to take care of it. I think it's a good thing for the state to give this responsibility to people." And that is the Zug massacre.
I know that there's a lot of, like, politics that goes along to what had happened, but while that is just a sad incident, I mean, I'm interested that we went through his backstory to see how he got to the way that he got, but it just, this could have been easily stopped, and like you said, going from these canton to canton, there's like going from state to state, not having the wherewithal to track his like past criminal record in other cantons or states is just so similar to like the United States, where people have, you know, purchased a gun in Illinois, but you know they lived in a state where they wouldn't be able to purchase a gun, and then it's okay, well, there's all these loopholes around how they're able to purchase this gun. It just seems that from the incest to the lawsuits, like, it seemed like it was pretty obvious that this guy was not right and was violent and radical, and just is sad that I feel like there was enough there for them to have gotten to him before it got to this point, regardless of the gun laws. It just seemed like there was he didn't pick up the gun day one. It just seemed he was crazy for a long time, and there was a couple layers that were there that just failed him and failed those other people.
Yeah, I'm interested to, we got a lot of requests about mass shootings, so I'm interested to look into the U.S. mass shootings, because at least with this one, you can pinpoint it to a specific thing. Like, he was rejected, his lawsuits were thrown out that week.
And he called those people out by name, like, he made it known.
Yeah, whereas, you know, I don't really know much about the recent shootings in El Paso and in Dayton, I think it was, but it seems like more and more of these white men are just angry, and they're just taking it out on whoever they can. It's not attributed to a specific thing, you know what I mean?
Well, for him, it was specific. It was specific in the sense that he was crazy in the mind. Like, he was crazy in the head. He had those issues, and a normal interaction with people sent him awry. Like, he, for whatever reason, like I said, everything was there to point out that this person should not have been in society with the rest of people.
Well, what's also interesting is, obviously, he was mentally ill, but he had enough mental capacity to know that the most damage would be done that Thursday. So, like, he didn't come back on that same day, Wednesday. He knew that he would cause more damage if he went back the next day.
And it wasn't like he had a handgun, too. I mean, it said he had the assault rifle, the shotgun, pistols, and then, I mean, the handmade grenade you can just make, but
the authorities found more in his car, too.
Wow.
It looked like he knew he was going to commit suicide, but he also had an escape plan and had a train ticket to try to escape as well. So it looked like it could have gone either way.
Maybe he was thinking he could have, like, gone scared and not pulled the trigger, or I don't know what his plan was. That is confusing.
It's crazy, and a lot of people who are pro-guns in the U.S. try to use Switzerland as an argument a driving force for their argument for pro-guns, and it's just, it's not even on the same plane of existence because they're neutral. It's armed neutrality. Like, mm-hmm. that is the whole part of their foreign policy, you know? Whereas you're gonna have a bad day. You're gonna get really, really, really angry. And it's mm-hmm. not even about that. It's if you have the gun, you're more likely to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to get a conceal and carry permit in Switzerland, too. They're all in their houses or in a central arsenal.
Yeah, the central arsenal kind of confuses me. So is that, like, someplace in town or it's in their house?
So I read that it's disguised as a house, but it's somewhere central in the town.
Okay. I actually kind of like that. I mean, like, not to get into politics too much one way or another, but it seems like from a political standpoint that they at least have avenues that they have tried to... I mean, like you said, after the laws they enacted after this had happened, which is what the arsenals were, they had, like you said, after 2001, after this had happened, they had the communal arsenals for the ammunition, so that way you have the gun in your house, but you have the ammo somewhere else.
They made changes. That's the biggest thing. They yeah. made fucking changes to the policies. And that's not what they're doing in America right now, and it needs to be done, which is so terrifying.
Yeah, this is sad. I mean, like I said, it's just interesting to see how in other countries it's the same. It's the radicalization, it's the availability to have the gun, the lapse in what was already there to prevent this from happening. It's the same kind of thing we have in America.
Here's the thing, though, that I don't want to get twisted, is when I was researching mass shootings, there's, like, 3 in the entire history of Switzerland. Mm-hmm.
We had 3 last week.
Right. We literally had 3 last week, and that's horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. And prayers out to the families. I know that's only just a small Band-Aid on that, yeah. but that just alters your life. And
it makes me not want to have kids. It makes me scared to put my kids in school.
Yeah.
Well, on that terribly depressing note, that is the end of this episode. And it looks like it'll probably be a mini-sode. Yeah. So, we hope that you enjoyed this episode. And please like us, subscribe, share, follow us on all our social media at The Crime Couple.
And make sure you have a great day. If you can hear, our dogs are clawing to get back into our room.
We're filming in our closet and our dogs are very mad at us right now. All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
Have a great one.
Bye.